Looking for a football show with a bit of a twist?
So I know the likes of Griezmann's big into his fashion.
He wanted a lot. One question he actually asked me was, could he make his studs light up when he runs?
Team 33, the football magazine show for the football purists.
Yeah, the Nike Mercurials from 1998, if you just show that boot to an entire generation of people, and they just get instantly nostalgic and remember everything from that era.
The very best interviews with the cult heroes of the past, and a look at the cultural side of football. Team 33, live at 9 p.m. every Friday on OTB Sports Radio. The OTB Podcast Network.
The Football Show on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. The greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to
make
my country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Down the edge of the box, just in the circle, and he hits it into the bottom right-hand corner. Danny Ings has scored for Southampton, and that's a fantastic finish from the former Liverpool striker. And just under 16 minutes on the clock, it's Watford 0, Southampton 1. Still only 27 as well, Danny Ings, so I'm sure plenty more Premier League goals for him. 38 he has now in 105 appearances. Oh. And we've just seen Ben Foster throw the ball away to Oriol Romeu. And oh, it's Danny Ings on the ball now. And Danny Ings fires it into the bottom corner. And that's a super finish from Danny Ings. An absolute mess of it made by Ben Foster. Ball has been crossed in here towards Danny Welbeck. And Danny Welbeck couldn't get there, but it's an OG, it looks like.
Yeah.
And that's come off the head of Jan Bednarek. So it looks like Ward-Prowse is shaping up to take this. The ball just off to the left of the goal as Foster looks at it. Hit by Ward-Prowse, and it's into the top corner. What a brilliant goal by James Ward-Prowse. And it looks like Watford's chances of coming back into this game and getting a leveller are all gone. It's Watford 1, Southampton 3.
Yeah, live Premier League was back yesterday on Off the Ball. It was good to bring it to you. We had Stephen Doyle there and Dame Delaney as Watford. Watford, I was about to say Norwich, I was thinking of Saturday night. Watford did not get the win they very much needed against Southampton, and they are staring relegation firmly in the face at the moment. We will have more live football for you across the coming days. On Thursday, we've Man City Liverpool, Nathan and Brian Kerr covering that one, and then two games again on Sunday. We have Newcastle, West Ham, Steve-O and Brian Kerr at that game. And then Sunday, 4:30, Liverpool against Aston Villa. Nathan and Dame Delaney calling that game. So that was the live football we brought you over the weekend. That was, of course, also Pat Nevin's signature tune. Hello, Pat Nevin. How are you doing?
I am very well. And you?
Very well. We're talking to each other live again. 9:00. I'm in studio. You're at home. We're back.
It feels normal. Yeah. It feels almost normal. Nothing's normal. I don't know if anything will ever be normal again, but it feels much more normal than it has been for a while. And even get to a few games myself recently, doing loads of, like everybody else, watching constantly on the telly as much as you can. Mm. But I found myself the other day streaming something, doing a Zoom, and also listening to a commentary from somewhere. It was weird. It was all over the place.
When you're at home these days, are you watching with the crowd noise on or off?
On, yeah, I'm absolutely on and on. I'm not saying it's perfect, it's absolutely not perfect, but I've heard enough games of football with just hearing the boot, the thud, and people shouting and echoing in the background. You know, to me, in the end, I could probably listen to it with the sound completely off. I just want to be entertained. And to be fair, I've seen a couple of games recently. There have been some stinkers, but I've seen a couple that have been really quite entertaining. One thing I will say, and I don't know if everyone would agree with this, right? You can have a stinker of a game, but see if you get a crowd there, it's bearable. You know, really, it's quite bearable. Stinker of a game with no crowd is not. You can't, honestly. It's almost impossible to watch it all the way through. I don't know what you feel about that, but I'm finding it really hard. You know, if there's no crowd there, no atmosphere, and not much good football, it's... Oh my goodness, I'm looking up Jane Austen movies instead, mate.
Well, I've reverted to crowd noise on, very much on, of late. I mean, initially I was fascinated to see what I might learn from crowd noise off, and it turns out the shouts and the, you know, sometimes it's just noises to let someone know, you know, someone's around the corner or someone's behind them. Lost their novelty pretty quickly. I would say it was no different to, as you're strolling through the five-a-side pitches in your local town, just the general shouts that you hear at any level of football, really. There was no great difference.
Just not some man on. The one that I was interested in, I wanted to hear the managers. I wanted to see and hear who had what methods, you know, just to get to pierce through the noise. And oddly, the one that's really jumped out is Pep. Pep's got this really odd way of making a noise. It's a kind of, it's hard to explain it. It's a kind of really deep noise, but it seems to, I thought it should be a high-pitched one to sort of penetrate through the crowd, because obviously he's played a fair amount of time in Barcelona. But it's not, it's this kind of booming thing that he does. And it's not even, he's not shouting anything. He's just attracting attention. And then he does his hand waving that nobody understands anyway. But it's, that's the one that I've got, you know, to see from the benches who's making the most noise. As for the players, you've no idea who's shouting most of the time anyway, even when you're there, never mind if you're watching it on the screen.
Let me give you Liverpool's starting 11 for Jurgen Klopp's first game. This just shows the job of work that he's done. So this is what he kicked things off with this season, which may well end up with 109 points, one of the great, if not the greatest, Premier League seasons thus far. This is where he inherited things. Mignolet in goal, he had a back four, Klein, Skrtel, Sacco, Moreno. He had Lucas, he had Chan, he had Milner, who's the only survivor, really. Lallana was there, he started, obviously still in the squad. He had Coutinho and he had Origi, who, you know, has hung around as well. Jeez, that's a hell of a way off where he is now.
It's absolutely extraordinary. I wouldn't have thought it was as many as that in such a short period of time. And most managers, they don't actually get that amount of time to do that amount of work, because it takes a few years to turn it around. But he's done it phenomenally. And if you think of that team, how many of those players would get in the current team? It's not any, is it?
No.
I don't know if it's any.
No, it's not. Even like Milner has drifted out of the absolute best 11 even now.
Exactly. So it's a massive change. Now, football teams, we don't notice it because we always concentrate on the big name players. But football teams do change. They do change fairly quickly. But that amount and that period of time is extraordinary. And all the fact that he's replaced them all with quality. Mm. You know, and where it isn't quality, it's workmen, not workmanlike. They're better than workmanlike, but they can do perfectly good jobs, so the real, real quality can express itself. So that's an amazing job. And some of the, if you start going through the squad, you know, the players like, I mean, the difference between, say, Robertson and Moreno. I mean, you say that to a Liverpool fan, they'll just laugh because they've had a real problem with Moreno. So, and all the way through the team, I mean, it helps if you get Alexander Arnold coming through. But the big ones, the big changes, and the big money, you know, they've done incredible jobs, and you always have to come back to Van Dijk. But, I mean, even people like Wijnaldum, you look at him, he's done a brilliant job, a brilliant, brilliant job this season. Not played every single game, but he was a player you probably wouldn't have thought of. He wouldn't have been a first pick of players from other clubs that you'd have considered. But that's one of the other joys of Klopp. It's not just a whole big bunch of money thrown at it. I'm not saying anyone can do that, but it's a hell of a lot easier. The big names are fine, but the other ones that he's placed in around it have done fantastic jobs.
Like, there's so many aspects of the job he has done, Jurgen Klopp, that is, to admire. Mm-hmm. It never really felt as if he wasn't making progress. You know, when you talk about the time he's been given, it always felt like he was making some kind of impact, even if just initially it was, he made Liverpool exciting. I mean, they were just a great watch. It was a fun place to go and watch your football. It was rock and roll football, to use his analogy. And he imbued the whole place with emotion, which really resonated. Do you remember the first time he went down to the Kop and did the arms in the air? You know, you brought the Dortmund thing and he was mocked. I think it was a 2-2 draw. I'm speaking off memory here, so if you remember, shout. I think it was like a 2-2 draw. Our Liverpool fan will text in on 53106 with West Brom. And he was mocked. I think it might have been a late winner, but he was saying, this is the character we want. And, you know, you got a feel-good energy going in the place. Really, like, from minute one, he has been making progress. It's amazing how he's gotten to this standard.
Yeah, see that every Liverpool fan will tell you the same thing. He is one of them. He feels like one of them. He comes from a different country, but the passion, he just reflects it back to him. But, you know, see if that's affected. Football fans are not stupid. Mm. They'll see it. They'll see a mile away. And we all know it. We all know when someone's doing the old badge kissing, and this is the 14th club badge that they've kissed, and we're all saying, yeah, very good. But with Klopp, there is something there. He had an affection, or certainly an admiration, for Liverpool Football Club, and he also knew what the history meant. And it clearly was an honour for him to do it, but he married this with the kind of the buzz about it, the passion that the fans have got, and said to him, look, we can do this together. I'll be part of it. But you need to be a special personality for everybody to buy in. How many people have tried to be that kind of guy? Mm. Have tried to be lively and your friend and all the rest of it? It's the hardest thing in the world. And you try and get a bunch of players to buy into that, especially the ones that aren't playing. That's bordering on important. That is so incredibly rare to do that. We know the ones that do it because they're usually successful at the big clubs and pay a lot of money. That helps as well. But there's something different, you know, about Klopp. Maybe even in Pep in that area, if he's better than in one area, it's that kind of relationship that he has with almost every single player that you get a feeling, even the guys in the reserves, they love him. Mm. You know, and you'll do anything for people that, you know, you have that passion for, that feeling for. And a lot of that comes down to, I think the thing we can all see is honesty. You can see it, you can feel it. I mean, he's not going to BS you. He's just going to tell you. Mm. And most of the time, I can't even think of any time where I'm thinking, yeah, sure, Jürgen. I'm not going with you with that one. Mm. Generally, I've thought, yeah, I think you feel that. I might not agree with you, but I think you feel it. And that sort of, if you've got that honesty and that straightforwardness and what you're doing is succeeding, you get massive buy-in. But to get buy-in from, I think it's hard to get from the fans, but you can get it. It's probably harder to get it from the whole group within the squad, but he's done that too. Mm. Then he got it for the owners as well. And that's brilliant. That's just amazing. Yeah. Get all in three gangs together. That's, you think how rare that is, and it is incredibly rare.
Yeah, on the owner's point, there was a good piece yesterday in the Mail on Sunday. Rob Draper had written it, and he was just charting the FSG 10 years, and he spoke to a couple of people in the real hierarchy of FSG, and they met him in New York in 2014, Klopp, and I think it was Gordon, one of them anyway, after meeting him, because they weren't sure if he was the real deal or if he was big teeth and goofy smile and hair and, you know, everything else. And one of them said that they were absolutely convinced he could run any FTSE 100 company in his sleep, that he was just a special character. But for them, they didn't bank on this being a 10-year thing, but it's been a 10-year thing. And you'd have to say, in the main, they've done a pretty good job as well. Like, they stuck with the trying to adopt the sabermetrics from Bill James and baseball. And, you know, for every Jordan Henderson and Luis Suarez, there was an Andy Carroll as well. So they took a while to get there, but they seem to have arrived now at a point where, either via Klopp or the signing committee, everyone they've signed in the last couple of years has just been an absolute success.
The one thing I've heard just through the grapevine is that they don't take one idea anymore. It's right. Just a whole bunch of everyone's ideas that are important as everyone else's. And it's sort of, you can't do a collegiate thing with that with most football managers, because they won't do it. They just won't do it because they want to be the top man. They want everything to come to them. And even though it's a really high wire balancing act that he does, that, yeah, he is the front of it. Yeah, he is popular. But you get a feeling he thinks, well, if I'm not, it doesn't matter. It's about the winning as well. He likes being popular. Everyone does. But it's kind of secondary. It's almost a byproduct to what he's doing. And I think they've kind of spotted that, the intelligence is there, the integrity is there, and all that thing, it's almost like, see the management speak that all those kind of people in these businesses are really impressed by. Mm. And then you can give them that management speak and then give them it for a wee while and then say, right, we'll dump that. Now let's talk for real. And he seems to be able to go and speak those two languages brilliantly to whoever he's talking to. So you're saying that he's gone over there and impressed them. He's gone over there and impressed them because they think, hey, he could live in our world. Mm. But also, he's pretty damn good in his world too. And by the way, we like working with this guy. And don't forget, that's a really, really important thing as well. And it's kind of hard to see a weakness. At the moment, and for quite some time, you know, I really can't see a weakness in what he does just now. Mm. And the biggest strength is, it's like in any business, if you're in a business and you've got management, quite often, somebody who's good at something, they keep on getting promoted until they find something they're useless at, right? It's a really common thing in management. And that's why you get a lot of rubbish, you know. I'm not talking football managers, I'm talking managers anyway. And he's kind of gone through all those stages and got to the top and still being actually quite specialist at what he does. It's actually really, really quite unusual to be able to do that. And I think they see that. They look around themselves, and I'm sure they see a lot of people in their industry. You know, even in FSG, there'll be people at middle management, and they're thinking, oh, God, I wish we could get rid of him. Mm. But he knows that you get there, but you don't get there by only one idea. You take his idea, and his idea, and your idea, and your idea. You put them all together and take the best of it, and accept when you're wrong.
So the difficult thing now, and I'm sure he would rephrase that and call it the exciting thing now, is to build on this and to do something similar next season. So cognizant of the fact that he's very aware of the delicate ecosystem that is a dressing room, and you know, he hasn't looked to buy someone that might upset the front three, or he hasn't looked to do anything which might upset the atmosphere in the dressing room, but still they will need to kick on. What do you suspect his answer would be if over the summer he sits down with whatever the transfer committee looks like these days and they say to him, well, look, what position? You know, we ticked off that goalkeeper box that you were on at us about, and we ticked off the centre-half box that you were on us about. What position do you want to make the marquee signing in this summer?
I think we all probably think it is another scorer, somebody that if you have a problem. Now, I'll put my hand up now, you probably asked me this question a year ago, and I probably said another striker. And they didn't. But eventually they're going to.
Most people say an extra sprinkling of class in midfield, by the way.
Well, they've kind of got by without it this far. I mean, I listen to a lot of pundits, right? And every single time you ask them, oh, what do they need? I promise you they'll say, oh, probably a centre-back, centre-midfield and a striker. They'll all say it.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what team you're talking about, they will all say that phrase. Because everybody could do it.
Sure.
It's easy to say that. So what you have to say is specifically something that really would, you know, help it. Now, the thing that helps is just now, it looks okay. It looks really good. But you have to see where the weaknesses are. The weaknesses aren't in the first team. Because if you look around now, if your name's Sergio Aguero, you know that you're going to have another guy with you. Because with that amount of games, Champions League, you know, league games, cup games, everything, you're going to have more than one. You're going to have rest periods. And I get the feeling that certainly if you look at, you know, Mane, you look at Mo Salah, they thank you for a little bit of a break. They could do with it now and again. The fact that they've managed it again this year, and because I thought last year they pushed it so far, they really had pushed it at the edge of the envelope, and you couldn't keep it going. The way he's managed it is because he's changed the style of the team a little bit, and he has, you know, given rest when he could. But he's changed the style and it hasn't been the heavy metal football, but it's been a more intelligent version of that. So that's great. But eventually, they're not superhuman. They will get injuries. Somebody will have that problem. It was a long period this season. People will forget it. And Mo Salah didn't play well for a good part of the season. You love him and he's great and he's fantastic and his numbers will still be great. I was at the games. There was a lot of games where he really wasn't even close to himself. And that was just tiredness. There's nothing more than that, just tiredness. So he has to make sure that if he possibly can, that that doesn't happen. So I think that will be one of the things he'll be looking at. But like most coaches, I think he'll look at age as well. You know, who's still got those legs? Who's going to have those legs? In actual fact, they're okay through most of the team. I think this up front's okay. So maybe another player in midfield who can do what Milner did for them. There's very few James Milners around. But if you've stuck somewhere and you want to stick, you've got right back problem, you've got left back problem, you've got centre midfield, right midfield, see a guy that can go and do every one of them. The gold dust. So Milner, we've talked about it, and everybody loves him. But he's five extra players. So you can just stick him anywhere. He'll do a great job for you absolutely anywhere. So you can find someone who is almost that adaptable. I think that would be an amazing thing for him as well. And also someone that adaptable, and those adaptable players are usually like this, who can take it in the chin when they're not playing. They can just about take it in the chin and still have the right attitude. Honestly, they're hen's teeth, these players, but if you can find one. And your next question is, who's that? I have no idea. That's where they get paid the big money for it.
They have a whole department. And one of the big things in their favour now is, I suspect, any player who can play for Jurgen Klopp in Liverpool will be very open to doing that just at the moment. I know you were covering Chelsea's win against Leicester yesterday. Suddenly the FA Cup, by the way. I mean, let's not call it a comeback, Pat, but I mean, it's probably going to be front and centre stage for the next couple of weeks. Semi-final lineup is very acceptable. So the interesting aspect of this game, Frank Lampard roundly praised. I saw the post-match coverage. I didn't get to see much of the game because we had that Watford game here live, but he made the three substitutions at half-time and, let's be fair, had the luxury of very good players on the bench to bring on. So Billy Gilmour, I saw the little package at full time. He was giving the ball away a lot, which is very un-Billy Gilmour-like. How off his game was he? Or what was going on in that first half? You can't hear me?
I can hear you now.
Sorry.
I know the question.
Yes, go on. Okay. Shoot.
Right. I do know the question. Right. there's something odd going on with Frank Lampard just now. He did it quite a few times at the start of the season, but this is now three games in a row. So they're playing against Aston Villa. They're struggling a bit. They play well, but they're a goal down. He makes a change. He brings on Pulisic. Pulisic scores. He doesn't take off Giroud. Everyone thinks you take off Giroud. Giroud scores. Right, so brilliant management of substitutions and non-substitutions. Then he goes to the next game and he plays against Manchester City. And he brings on Tammy Abraham, who 16 minutes later basically scores a goal, but it's saved on the line by Fernandinho's hand, and he wins it, right? You know where I'm going here, don't you? Mm-hmm. Leicester City, 0-0, brings on Azpilicueta on the right, who is involved in the build-up to goal and gives it in to Ross Bartley, who's on for as a substitute 18 minutes before, and he scores. He's having this run just now where when he changes it, it's extraordinary. He just won his team 3 points from substitutions. Now, I can hear some people in the background going, yeah, if you can make five substitutions in the match, there's a fair chance they're going to win games for you. But even so, I think it's quite extraordinary. You don't get that lucky that often. I'd spotted that he was doing that really well. His substitutions were really good earlier in the season. They were really quite effective. But he's spotting it really well now. It's extraordinary. He did an odd thing when he took three players off. He took Billy Gilmore off. He took Reece James off. And he took Mason Mount off. Average age, 20. Mm. Average age of the players he brought in, 27. He needed experience. It sounds dead simple when you put it like that. But it worked. And also needed the physicality. Just brought on bigger players as well. They had the battle. They knew they had the battle in the midfield. They were losing that physical battle. And they won it again. Sometimes it's dead technical. Sometimes it's, hey, get back to basics and know the things you have to do in football. And Frank, he doesn't get too specific about it and talking about how, wow, fantastic and different I am. He sometimes does the really simple things and they work.
Mm. That's interesting. I hadn't spotted that wider trend. And what was going on with Billy Gilmore, who thus far has been so brilliant in possession?
Hams, just Hams, young kid. You know, the targets of him, Leicester, they had basically three dogs of war in there. You know, no Maddison playing, so they had the three dogs of war who went and chased and harried. And the first couple of touches that Billy had, they were straight and he was rushed. And when that happens to a young guy, well, you get on top of him. And I thought they'd done brilliant on top of Gilmore. They just harried them every single time. And he lost concentration and he lost his composure. And composure is the thing that is very, very special about him. And when he lost that composure, he had to look around and I think he needed some strength and some loud voices helping him. Mm. And he looks around and Mason Mount's a lovely kid and a good player, but not necessarily the loudest. Trust me, N'Golo Kanté is not the loudest either. And he didn't have a lot helping him. So, you know, Frank did absolutely the right thing. A lot of people would say, you ruin that little lad's confidence when you take him off. No, you won't. That's what happened. When you're a young player, you learn, and you learn more from the bad days than you do the good days. So he'll be fine. Mm. He'll be gutted, and he should be gutted, because that's how good players feel. But he'll be fine. He'll be back. He's good now.
And there were shots, they showed them on BT, of Lampard talking to him after he'd been substituted, and it was conciliatory. It wasn't like he was giving him the hairdryer treatment.
Oh, no, and it wouldn't even be a consideration of that, because Frank's not stupid. He wouldn't do that. And he will explain what's happened. He will be saying, every player's had it. With every single player, off the top of my head, right, I'll remember one I had, right? I go and play for Scotland, and I've been asked to be basically the main player in the team. And we want you to win this game for us today. And I had the biggest howler of a stinker. And it's against Luxembourg, right? Mm. Now, the grass is about that long, right? Mm. And it's the bobbly pitch. And it was impossible to play in it. And I was so gutted. And I thought, I'll never play for Scotland again. The manager said, oh, no, you're right enough. You couldn't run with the ball on that. It was a stupid mistake. Thank goodness he said that. And I thought, yeah, right enough. It's only one game. Yeah. Never mind. Move on. And yeah. Billy will be able to that. It'll be absolutely fine. And I think every player's had one of those days.
Yes, he's still so young. Listen, we only have about a minute and a half, 2 minutes. Did you catch the Manchester United game?
Yes, I did. And oddly enough, I think they're learning how to win with not being absolutely brilliant. And there's enough quality there now. So any team that comes up and plays against them now thinks they're going to hit a stride at some point. I think they will hit a stride at some point. They have enough good players. The attitude of most of them seems pretty good just now. Mm. Whether that's going to be good enough to get to top four, it's a bit iffy that. but they've got a real good chance. Is it good enough to win the FA Cup? Well, anyone can win a cup, but I still think they're third favourites of the four that are left just now. But the game between them and Chelsea, that'll be an absolute cracker. I mean, I'm really looking forward to that one already. Yeah. And as you say, the FA Cup, it's not dead. If you've got the big name teams that they've got left in it, it's extraordinary. It's extraordinary that that's happened, but it's classic, isn't it? It's happened a few times now. The big teams don't bother their backsides until it gets to the quarterfinals, and then by the time it comes to the semi-finals, it's the most important thing in the world. But before then, if they get knocked out, they'd have just shrugged their shoulders. I think Man United are an interesting story, but I think City are the bigger one, aren't they? Because it could still be the greatest ever season for Manchester City Football Club.
Yeah.
And everyone, no one's talking about them.
The Fernandes thing is so interesting at United. I must say, look, they've signed a lot of players in the last few years. So when a player in his mid-20s arrived from Portugal, I think most Man United fans said, here's another so-so signing. You know, in a long line lately. And geez, he's really made, like, he injects so much sharpness sometimes into their play. Do you agree with people who are saying of late that the balance of Fernandes, Pogba, and then somebody sitting in front of the defence, be it Matic or McTominay or whoever going forward, that that's a midfield three that could actually really work for United going forward?
Yeah, 100%. Just the size and the physique and the fitness and the strength of all three of them. And the creativity. I mean, McTominay's actually perfect, but the other two have got the creativity as well. You stick all that together and they can steamroller teams if they want to. But all three, yeah, and you've not got a problem with two of them. But if all three of them, including Pogba, puts in the work rate, and you know he really has to get his head in the right place, I think it's down to him really. And if you get those three with the right attitudes, I think there's very few that are going to be able to live with them. They could be that good. But I've been saying, how long have we been saying F with Pogba? You know, there's many players we've known through the years. You go, what a player he's going to be, then you find out he's 28 and you're still saying, what a player he's going to be. He's kind of got to do it really, really regularly. We know he's great, but you've got to be great all the time if you're going to be one of these set of midfielders that we all look back on and say, hey, you won your team the title or you were a major part of it. At the moment, he's still a distance off doing that regularly enough.
Yeah, no, it's true. We're approaching now and never territory. Pat, thanks so much. Much appreciated.
Pleasure. Look forward to seeing you soon.
Yeah, talk to you next week, Pat and Evan, on the weekend's football over at Selhurst Park. 75 minutes on the clock. Crystal Palace 0, Burnley 1.
Paddy Power. As much a part of Irish football as celebrating a home draw.
Not sure if we've many Northampton Town fans out there, but you're into League 1. A 4-0 win against Exeter City in the League 2 playoff this evening. Meanwhile, Premier League, 10 minutes to go, Crystal Palace 0, Burnley 1 is the latest. Now, Alan Smith was with Jer and Nathan this morning on OTBAM. Arsenal's Alan Smith, that is, because you may have seen that Theo Foley from Inchicore, Dublin, passed away aged 83, former Irish international, and he was Arsenal assistant manager to George Graham, not least in their league winning season of 1989. Here's Alan Smith.
Yeah, I mean, he was the balance to George's disciplinarian type nature. Obviously, you couldn't get away with much with George, but Theo was the good cop to the bad cop, if you like. I mean, he was the assistant who would take us for the warm up, and we'd have a laugh and a joke before the gaffer came around the corner. I never forget one day. I don't think the gaffer was there, and we were running around the perimeter of London Colney, and we in twos in a long line. And Niall Quinn was actually up the top with Theo, and he decided to rugby tackle Theo, and they ended up in a ditch. And you know, some coaches might get quite annoyed about that, but we were all obviously in stitches. Theo just brushed himself down and got on with it. He was one of those characters. I mean, all the lads loved him. But he was also a good coach, and we all respected him as well. Obviously, he was at Anfield in 1989, and he was a big part of our success.
It's funny how you do need a bit of yin to yang when somebody like George Graham, because look, we kind of don't know exactly what Graham was like, but we know that he had that very stern exterior and a sharp tongue, it seems like. But you can't be like that the whole time, because otherwise, you know, work becomes a bit of a drudge.
Yeah, that's right. And I think the gaffer understood that with Theo. You know, they worked together at Millwall. And they were good friends. And I think George understood what Theo brought to the party in terms of his character. He was a great personality, always telling jokes. I remember one day in training, I had some kind of cramp in my hamstring, and I went, "Oh, I've got a spasm in my hamstring." And Theo was just falling about laughing, and from that moment on, he called me Spaz. That was my nickname, Spaz. But he just had that way with everyone. But you can't just be a joker, of course. He was the assistant manager of a very successful team, so he knew his onions when it came to training.
Can you talk a bit about that? Because he obviously did know the game and he played at a good level and he played 9 times for the Republic of Ireland as well. In terms of his impact on the training ground and how that Arsenal team played, and particularly, I guess, that defensive structure that Arsenal side were so well known, how involved was he in the day-to-day training and implementation of what George Graham wanted to do?
Yeah, I mean, he was heavily involved. He was always there. George would lead the session. You know, all those sessions we had with the back four, working on shape and everything, and Theo would be there. And then he was one of those that would go around to the individuals and having a quiet word, you know, you're okay with what the boss is asking you to do here, and maybe explaining one or two things. So he was just that backup, but always out there on the training ground. Always used to tell us how good he was at penalties. I think he managed to convert one for Northampton one day, and he used to boast about his expertise from 12 yards. And, of course, we all used to take the mick out of him as well, but it was very affectionate with Theo. I mean, all the lads, I've spoken to a few of them since he passed away, and we're all devastated.
I didn't realise George Graham was quite the tracksuit manager then. He was obviously on the training pitch for every session, or as many as he could be.
Yeah, he was. Listen, the days that he weren't there, you could count on one hand if it was maybe a funeral or something. And on those days, you kind of thought, oh, we can relax a bit today, because he was always there, always there. He was a tracksuit manager. You'd see him jogging around the corner and immediately you'd be up on your toes.
How good a manager was George Graham? In retrospect now, he kind of, in some ways, his career, we probably need to revise exactly where his standing was as a manager. Obviously, there was a whiff of scandal, and that might have diminished his standing in the eyes of a lot of people. But, you know, we've been talking a good bit on the show this morning about teams who do something for the first time in a long time deserve a whole heap of credit. And there's no way that Arsenal would have won those league titles and bridged the gap from the team in the early 70s if it hadn't been for the force of personality and the football nous of somebody like George Graham.
No, I think when he arrived at the club in 86, he saw a bit of a soft underbelly there. A team that wasn't going anywhere, and he had to change things and change them quite radically. And he introduced real steel to the side and determination. He always used to say, people think you're southern softies, let's go up there to one of the northern cities and show them we're not going to roll over. You know, he was determined that we would be a tough team to beat, that we would stand up for ourselves. But tactically, he was excellent as well. Our success in Europe showed that. He switched from 4-4-2 on a Saturday in the league to 4-3-3 in the European Cup Winners' Cup. He just thought we were too open in midfield when we got knocked out of the European Cup in 91 by Benfica. And he worked hard on the tactical side of things. So he wasn't just a disciplinarian. He understood the nuts and bolts of the tactics. He knew exactly what he wanted.
Do you think he gets the credit he deserves for that period of time?
Well, maybe not. I think now it's beginning to come back. People are appreciating exactly what he did. That, you know, Arsene Wenger would have struggled to achieve what he did so quickly. Arsene obviously inherited that back four, back five, which gave him a great platform to go on and win the double in 98. We hadn't won the title in 18 years. And so in 89, when we did that, it was a turning point for the club. And it was the start of everything that came afterwards.
I guess as well, so many Arsenal supporters for so long under in the Arsene Wenger thought success was going to be such a regular thing that they forgot there was a time actually that it didn't come as straightforward, that there was a time when the club needed to be rejuvenated and brought back to life like George Graham did. On 89, then, while we have you on and we're talking about that, and there's been obviously a lot of reminiscing about Liverpool and that 89-90 period. That night at Anfield, What's the standout memory for you of that night, away from the goal?
Good question. I suppose Mickey Thomas's goal, really, and the fact that once I'd clipped it through towards him, it was just, sounds a cliche, but it did seem to go into slow motion. All the lads say the same. We could all see him being closed down from left and right, red shirts converging, and we all thought Mickey was going to leave it too late. So when he eventually just clipped it over Grobler, I mean, that was the moment. We quickly went to Mickey and then went to the corner of the ground where our fans were, and it was just bedlam. Just the whole night was incredibly special. We all look back on it now with tremendous fondness, and just, you know, we're just so honoured, really, to have been involved in a game of that magnitude. It seems to get bigger and bigger as you move away. We've made a film about it, and they've been showing it on the telly during lockdown, that match. So we're all very proud. It was an amazing night.
Is there stuff from the season that you remember, like signposts along the way, that you're thinking, actually, this is going to go our way, or this isn't going to go our way, or we're at least going to give ourselves a shot of winning this in the last second away from home on goal difference?
Yeah, well, I mean, before leading up to Christmas, we were flying, hardly lost a game. And then afterwards, we were dropping points. And then our last two games at home, Derby, we lost to them 2-1. And then we drew with Wimbledon at home. And that's your last home game. And you always do a little lap of honour. And the feeling at Highbury that night was, well, we've given it a good try. Thanks for supporting us. And the fans were probably feeling the same way. We got a warm reception as we left the pitch and in the dressing room that night. We just deflated. I mean, we hadn't given up. The chairman came down, as he would do once a season, you know, to say well done. But the gaffer, you know, he said, listen, lads, we're still in this. We've made it hard for ourselves. But, I mean, we all left Highbury that night, drove back home feeling as if we've let this slip. But then when the maths became clear and we knew we had to win by two goals, I mean, we didn't immediately think, yeah, we're going to do that. But we thought we're still in with a shout. But yeah, those last two home games were huge disappointments. We could have made life a bit easier for ourselves.
Your goal comes in the first half, is that right?
No, shortly into the second half, about 10 minutes in.
Okay, yeah, so at halftime it's still nil all. What's that dressing room like?
Well, the lads were disappointed because we'd hardly had an effort on goal. Steve Bold had a header that got cleared off the line, but that was about it. And we're thinking, we've got to score two goals here. And, you know, we can't really get into their box. And then my goal. But the gaffer was always about the clean sheet. He said, as long as we keep a clean sheet, we're in this, lads. If we can see, we've got to get three and it's all over. Perfectly, he said, we'll push on a bit now. The two wing backs, as they were that night, Lee Dixon and Nigel Winterburn, he says, Lee, Nigel, I want you to push on a bit more, try and get some balls into the box, and we'll get that first goal. So the gaffer takes a lot of credit for really sending us out with a lot of belief.
Alan, great stuff, and thanks a million for joining us this morning and sharing your memories of Theo Foley, and I hope you're keeping well.
Yeah, no, thank you for that. I hope, you know, everyone will remember Theo, and I hope the club will do something as well. He deserves to be fondly remembered. He's played a big part in the history of the club.
Yeah, there you are. Alan Smith this morning with Jerry and Nathan, former Irish international from Inchicore, Dublin, passed away at the age of 83. And if you're just joining there, that was the lads paying tribute to him this morning. Theo was assistant to George Graham, very much part of the 89 title-winning side. We'll take a short ad break. Latest in the Premier League, 92 minutes on the clock. Looks like Crystal Palace are headed for another defeat. They are 1-0 down to Burnley. That would be a very nice win indeed for Burnley and Sean Dyche, who's not on the best of terms with his board at the moment.
Paddy Power, as much a part of Irish football as celebrating a home draw.
Now you're welcome back. So Burnley have beaten Crystal Palace this evening, 1-0. Really good night for Sean Dyche. He's been at odds with his board this week. Only put 7 players on the bench this evening. Could have put more on, but elected not to. And has been a bit tetchy, it seems, between board and Dyche of late. And a few rumblings even that he may well be of interest to Crystal Palace if Roy Hodgson decides to hang up his boots at the end of the season. So a very good night for him, I suspect. A 1-0 win for Burnley. That's a full time. I think Klopp's first master stroke, says Martin, we were talking about Pat Nevin earlier on, was banishing Sacco to the reserves. Very good player, French international, but a messer. Sent out a message, no more sloppiness Yeah, one of many masterstrokes, it would seem, on Jurgen Klopp's part. We are pretty much done for this evening. Tomorrow morning, OTBAM, as usual, coming your way, 7:30. Jair and Mortrasa Nikalic, who was on our pay-per-view, by the way, Mortrasa, at the weekend, and very, very good. Well worth checking out that. They are on OTBAM tomorrow. They'll be speaking to David Goff. You might have seen it was in the papers over the weekend. He's not going to ref this year, inter-county. He is a lot of family members who are umpires and on the sidelines, and he's looking at the COVID situation, and it's not for him. So they'll be talking to David Goff. They also have Kevin Walsh, formerly, obviously, Galway manager and All-Ireland winner himself, on the show as well, and Leitrim's Sporting Mount Rushmore. So that's on the way tomorrow morning. We're back 7 o'clock as usual tomorrow evening. All our good stuff on the OTB Sports app as ever in the App Store and Google Play stores. Michael Deignan tonight, well worth checking out if you didn't get a chance to. Obviously, the Offaly County Board Chairman now. He said of the GAA generally and certainly centrally, they need to grow up and they need to grow a pair of balls. He's not happy with how things are being handled at the moment. So that is all waiting for you on the OTB Sports app. In the meantime, news headlines, and then Richie McCormack is in for Tom Dunn next.
Give him a ball and he out of grass. He'll give you a move for the perfect pass. Give him a ball and he out of space. He'll give you a move with guiltly grace.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.